Welcome to the bonus podcast. Welcome to the bonus podcast, guys. Augustas Šuliauskas, Gytis Blaževičius, Donatas Urbonas, Mantas Ramelis behind the camera. This is the rare podcast that we're doing straight after the game night that we had. But we just understood that it's impossible to sleep on this playoff race. We cannot wait until Monday. We have to deliver some hot takes after big dramas, big games that we had. And of course, this playing race is crazy. Everything changes in one round. So let's not... I don't know, man.
Wheels keep on turning.
I know. It's a tough morning to me. Anyways, yeah. So today on the podcast, we're going to talk about drama in Belgrade. Big win for Olympiakos. Big loss for Partizan. Also, Žalgiris-Milan game. Other games that impact the playing race a lot, Keenan Evans rumors, maybe some other rumors that we're going to drop on this pod.
Ooh.
So let's start with Partizan Olympiakos. Again, huge win for Olympiakos, chasing the home court advantage and, of course, securing the playoff spot. And huge loss for Partizan. I mean, Partizan had the play-in in their pocket. You have a 13-point four-quarter lead against Olympiakos in a low-scoring game. If you win this game, you have tiebreakers against Efes and Baskonias, so it means that you just have to win Alba away and Valencia at home.
Mm-hmm.
One bottom team, one non-playoff team. You cannot ask for a better setup when you're chasing this playoff ticket in this crazy race. But you waste this opportunity. You know, okay, they still have good chances because of the tiebreakers, but if... Now everything is basically in Efes' hands. Now we have to chase Baskonia as well. But if Partizan is missing the play-in this year, I mean, they cannot blame anybody else. I mean, last year they were blaming Sergio Llull. They were blaming Gershon Yabusele, Real Madrid, EuroLeague, the entire world. If they're going to miss the playoffs this year, they can blame only themselves.
Big time choke by Partizan in the fourth quarter, I have to say. And, like, are you kidding me? In the time where you need maximum concentration, when you are up by 13 points, you allow Olympiakos to score easy baskets one after the other in the easiest of situations. You have miscommunications on defense, and you allow a 12-0 run when you basically, like Donata said, they had the play-in in their pocket. Like, a win against Alba away when you need a win must win there, it's like an easy thing to do. But 12-0 run, they scored, Olympiakos scored like on miscommunication on Spain pick and roll, careless pass by someone in Partizan, transition basket. And then on the sideline out of bounds play, I was...
Papanikolaou.
Yeah, I was shocked. Open. But at the same time, then I remember, okay, Partizan are one of the worst teams defensively. But they were doing a hell of a job in the first three quarters. They were focused. They were intense. They had energy. They communicated. And then this to have such a breakdown. Like, Bruno Caboclo is not allowing Papanikolaou to go up when there is nobody in the paint. So it's like an easy pass and he makes a layup. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, really? Is this going to happen now? This breakdown mentally? And
then a lot of mistakes.
Then were a lot more mistakes, you know, in the end of game. And even on the most important possession, when the game was tied, it's another Spain pick and roll. I already mentioned they made a mistake there. They miscommunicate. Two guys are on one. There is a wide open dunk there, the layup, and you don't get a stop. Kudos to Olympiakos, of course, because...
Of course. You have to say this first as well, because I think what changed the game was the defense that Walkup and Nigel Williams got five steals in the game. Kevin Punter had no space to breathe, really, and the shots he was putting up were all really difficult. And all the turnovers they forced, I mean, this was a big, big effort on Olympiakos' guards lineup, and I didn't expect Nigel Williams got to be so good on the other end of the court. Offensively, he was amazing as well, but the props.
It feels like, I mean, Goss played for Partizan, right? So do they still owe him some money or what? I mean, last year, game three in the playoffs, Goss scores 22 points, saves Real Madrid, changed the momentum of the playoff series, Madrid advanced to the Final Four. Now, this game, this performance by Nigel Williams guys might actually put Partizan away from the playoff picture. So that's how crucial his performance was, with these crazy off-board shots, post-up situations, some really tough situations, but he still managed to score steals, deflections. I mean, Goss was like, it's basically Goss time again. At this point of the year, like last year, he was dominating from the playoffs. From the game three of the playoffs, he was really important for Real Madrid.
He had that shot in the game three that decided the outcome.
Yeah. And he was huge in the final four as well. Yeah. I mean, he was awesome. So maybe it's this time of the year. It's Nigel Williams' God's time of the year.
Goss has got time in Belgrade. You could even say that, you know. Because even before the bank shot that he made, I wrote down one note, like the importance of his shots. For end of first quarter, they're down like, whatever, 6 or 8 points, he scores in 4 seconds, full court play. End of second quarter, the same thing happening again. He scores in like 5 or 6 seconds in the last shot. And then he has that three-pointer down 13 when there is a, like, I don't know, he's shooting from like 9 meters. And then, you know, another three-pointer off the bank in the fourth quarter. That was huge, so.
Season high, 17 points by Goss.
Yeah. Another thing I was impressed by was on Partizan's side, the offensive rebounding, something we also should probably talk about. And maybe, Augustus, you could tell us. In technical terms, what happened, was that more of an Olympiakos problem? But I was surprised because, first of all, Lede wasn't playing. Second of all, they're playing against Mustafa Fall and Moses Wright, kind of a front line. So Frank Kaminski and Caboclo, especially, grabbed so many offensive rebounds. And I think, this is from what I saw, it was because they did switch a lot, Olympiakos, and then you would have a fall on the perimeter, and then there's nobody under the rim to grab the rebounds, and they really got out-rebounded. So was that the main issue for Olympiakos in the first three quarters?
Yeah, I would say exactly what you said, the switching defense. They used it throughout the second and third quarter, and that's why you get more opportunities to get offensive rebounds. But at the same time, Partizan's energy was really high in the like, let's say, first three quarters of the match. And with this combo, you get a lot of offensive rebounds. Let's check.
So they got 18 offensive,
but only 13 second chance points. That's not a lot. Like, they got offensive rebounds, but they didn't convert. So
I mean, the last one by Ponitka was a very good example of what happened throughout the game. It was so forced. So
he was rushing the play a lot.
Yeah, he rushed. He rushed, basically, yeah. And they got, I think I counted 8 offensive rebounds, or 8, either 8 or 6, I'm not sure anymore, in the fourth quarter as well. So even in the fourth quarter, they were able to get those offensive rebounds, but not capitalize them on them, as you said.
For this reason, we have bbalytics.com, actually, to check those offensive rebounds. Six according to bbalytics, 6 in the fourth quarter. But hey, as well as we're giving this big chain on Nigel Williams' Goss neck, like Mike Malone does in Denver, we have to talk a little bit more about Thomas Walkup defense against Kevin Bunder. You just mentioned the way he denied Kevin Bunder from the ball.
It was glued to
him. To me, it was crucial. Because when Partizan tried to create through others, it was disaster. And it also comes to the fact that it wasn't like that they didn't create shots. They had some nice looks, but nobody just could make them. But
those you missed like three, I think.
Kaminski had a lot of good situations, including this last three-pointer that could win them the game. But I mean, the decision to put Walkup under KP's skin was crucial because Partizan just lost their offensive rhythm. They scored their first field goal after 4 minutes in the fourth quarter. The second time they scored, it could have been the free throws, actually. It also took another 4 minutes. So they were completely out of the rhythm. And I think that, you know, all the kudos goes to Walkup. And let's not forget that when Partizan was up by 1 with 2 minutes left, there was this, you know, crucial mistake in the middle of the court by KP. Thomas Walkup just got this steal. I think this time the steal was, let's say, more clear than the last one in Piraeus when Walkup or somebody else was just, you know, going on KP, going on the line as well. You know, it was a crucial mistake. But this time everything was clean in my eyes, in my world. Yeah. And Walkup was just huge defensively.
Walkup and Williams Goss, because when Walkup was off KP, then Williams Goss was on him. And then he had literally the whole game, 37 minutes KP had to play because nobody else was able to create for Partizan. And even for KP, even though he managed to score 19 points, he shot 1-for-6 from 3 points because he just didn't get a actual decent shot there.
Yeah,
he had like, what, 3 shots that didn't even touch the rim?
Yeah.
So just, you know, you're mentioning the guards, but to me, it's always the whole Olympiacos defense. Like,
mm-hmm.
to keep top 3 offense in the league at home at 69 points, that's just amazing job. Another proof of their super solid defense. They're using the switch way more, like 20 minutes in this game, and then the drop with Mustafa Fall, 20 minutes. But I thought when they switched with Mustafa Fall, like Kevin Punter had to shoot those super tough shots over him. I don't know how you can see the rim when you're shooting against Mustafa Fall or even Moses Wright. That's some, you know, great defense there. And yeah, 69 points, top 3 offense in the league. To me, that's insane numbers, honestly.
In my eyes, they're still good guys. I mean, Partizan. I mean, if you count down to one Nigel Williams-Goss off-board three-pointer, if you take away this crazy important offensive rebound by Janulis Lorenzakis, actually, it was only his 7th offensive rebound this season, and it happened like with 1 minute to play.
Crucial.
If Kaminsky is just making those 2 open looks, Partizan was winning this game.
Even KP's shot, I think it was a 3-pointer that just rimmed out at the end as well. Yeah. It was just a lot of these situations where they got unlucky as well.
That's true. But in general, it was such a wasted opportunity by Partizan that might be so painful in 2 rounds.
They dominated the game for 30 minutes. Like they were, I'm okay by saying that they were the better team for 30 minutes. But they were just so bad in that like 5 minute span to start the 4th quarter.
You lose the momentum, and then the other team starts gaining the momentum, and you start panicking. And then you saw how they got frustrated with themselves, with the referees. Then you get, you know, out of emotionally just like out of it, out of the game yourself. So that's what happened. They lost the momentum and they got frustrated with everything around the game. So
yeah, and especially when the other team is the Final Four caliber team.
They can
like Olympiacos. So this bonus episode was brought to you by Hostinger. Hostinger has many products for website creation, and one of them is an AI-powered website builder. I have no knowledge in creating websites. I have no knowledge in programming. I have no knowledge in coding, graphics, logos, or whatever. And I actually tried to make my own website with this great Hostinger website builder.
Okay, show me.
And I don't have it right there. But I made it basically in 5 minutes because it's so freaking simple. Drag and drop options. They have a lot of designs already prepared for you. A lot of generic pictures, but you can also create your logos, pictures for the website with these AI tools. And I have to tell you, you know, these 5 minutes were enough for me to be so persuaded about this whole thing that I was like, okay, maybe I should really create some website for myself, you know, because it was really funny. You can improve all those things on the website builder really easily. And, you know, it involves you so much in this whole creating process that I was like, okay, if I would try to do something, I would do this, but okay, it might not be according to what Basket News actually wants. So yeah, we'll see.
Okay. I like that they have that function for creating the logos with AI. Because
that's crazy.
Because I spent so much time on creating our bonus podcast logo and other logos. But if there was an option to just create a logo with AI, I mean, there's other tools, but that they have it integrated together with...
Man.
When you're just creating a website, a lot of people don't think about, their brand. They just think, I need a website to sell this or to do this. But this is a very important part of your experience on the website to see the branding as well. So that's a very good thing that they have in there. And WordPress that they use, they enhance it with the AI tools, is already easy to use. But with AI tools, you literally don't need to do anything. You just type in what you want, and it just appears in front of your eyes, which is great.
if the dad of our podcast said that he created a website in 5 minutes, like, yeah, what more do you can? What more can you ask from
Hostinger? It's the best ad. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I would be obsessed with the marketing integrations, like where you have this analytics from your campaigns that you're doing from Google Analytics, Tag Manager, and all the for every other platform, all that numbers. To have them in one place, I think that's amazing. And really, you should look no further than Hostinger if you're thinking about creating that website. Yeah.
And actually now this is the best time to start building your website, because we can offer you an additional 10% discount for all hosting plans by using a code BNEWS10. Free domain as well as a free AI website builder is included. BNEWS10.
Everything's free. You just got to take your chance and build your business and make money without working. That's it.
By the way, speaking of the Final Four and big teams, title contenders, there was this report that Keenan Evans has committed to Olympiacos to join them after the season. I just want to hear your reactions.
Who was this reported by? You? If no, it's not you, I don't trust it.
But I can tell you something. Sotiris Vatakis, who reported it first, is a trustworthy reporter.
Okay.
I mean,
but
there
it's been denied, right?
Aren't many reporters that I trust in Europe. And this is a tough business. Breaking news and stuff, it's a tough business. A lot of bad reports are out there and Olympiacos denied. But I just tell you two things. Sotiris Vatakis is a trustworthy reporter. And the other thing is that if Keenan Evans, I will be surprised if Keenan Evans is not wearing Olympiacos jersey next season.
Okay.
That's all for me.
Okay. So what's your question about this?
Do you think that's a great fit for Olympiacos and Keenan Evans? Is it the best fit from all the situations that he could choose from?
I don't know if it's the best fit, but for me, it's a perfect fit between the team and the player. First of all, because Keenan is by nature an unselfish player. He doesn't need the ball. And I feel like in Bartsoka system, where the ball is flowing, moving, he would just fit right in with his. And then he would just bring so much more perimeter talent that they have, like Cannon. But like, that's a different level of offense that Keenan Evans can bring. And he can defend. So he's a bit over Cannon. In those regards, we shouldn't even compare. But yeah, I feel like it's a perfect fit for me. And he's coachable. He said this himself recently in one of the podcasts, that I'm never the guy who needs a lot to take a lot of shots. But if the coach needs me to take those shots, I will take them. So I think in this system, it's a perfect match, really.
Like, Olympiacos fans, if you are worried, because I know you might think the guys you signed from Žalgiris don't fulfill your expectations recently, but this one is different. I'm all in, to be honest. I don't want to speculate, but the only guy who doesn't have, I think, a contract extension is Isaiah Kanan, right?
Yep.
In that team. So I think he is going to replace Isaiah, and I think it's the perfect fit. Just imagine, like, in the starting lineup, you have Walkup's defense and Evan's offense. At the same time, to have these two guys that are at the top in each category, Olympiacos, I think, badly needs a guy who could create a shot off the dribble in the end. You mentioned that. And I'm glad you mentioned his defense, because we all know what Olympiacos needs and why this is a perfect fit offensively. But I think we often overlook one thing when talking about Keenan Evans. Like, defensively, he's really good. He's above average. Why Žalgiris took him? Because he's also tall. So after switches, he can deny, he can front. He's not as bad. He's not a liability defensively. So imagine what it will do to Olympiacos' defense too. Like, you have a super tall lineup with Mustafa Fall, with Thomas Walkup, with Evans there. who is the liability then?
Mm-hmm. By the way, he's not like super tall. He's not 2 meters.
No,
he's 192, 193.
But that's more than enough in Europe.
But it's his body, actually, I think. He's a very solid built guy who cannot be pushed around. And he has that defensive instinct, which is, I think, is even more important. He goes for the steals and he takes the right positions.
And it's not just about going for the steals. It's just about, you know, not losing the position if you're in a switch situation and you have to deny the ball from the big man or try to push him out of his position close to the basket. And this point is very interesting to me. Because to me, Keenan Evans, among all those great EuroLeague scorers, he's probably the best defensive scorer that we have in the EuroLeague. The best all-around scorer that we have in the EuroLeague. Let's see how it's going to change when he will get this big paycheck and when he will figure out that, you know, in EuroLeague they pay money for offense. But he has instincts, he has desire, and he has, in my eyes, he has a great body to be an all-around scorer. But what is interesting from what I've been hearing for last couple of weeks, trying to evaluate his potential for the NBA or for the powerhouses, I know that in many NBA scouts' eyes, his size is not good enough for the NBA, first of all. And secondly, I heard that even some big EuroLeague teams were questioning his size for the EuroLeague level, for the top EuroLeague level, which surprised me. Because if you look at all the ever greatest EuroLeague scorers, you know, Shane Larkin, Mike James, Marcus Howard, okay, maybe Lorenzo Brown is a different case, but Wade Baldwin is a different case. But Keenan Evans, with his size and with his defense, he's at least top three.
I understand, NBA scouts have this because it is true.
Yeah. But by the NBA standards, it's different.
By EuroLeague standards, I think we are looking at the number one defense with Keenan Evans there. Like, they're really good right now. They're even better next year with him. And, like, I think Olympiacos fans will love this guy. He's a good guy, you know, good character. I think when he gets paid, he's still playing defense as hard as he's doing right now. And yeah, just get ready for those one-handed, you know, one dribble with the left hand, pull-up freeze. He doesn't need many dribbles to create. Perfect for Olympiacos system. So I will say this. I think they're number one contenders if they sign him next season. Mm. They have the system. They have the core. Come on now. What is there?
It's very early to
I
say
just
something
had
like that,
all or... these memories, like Will Clyburn joins FSO, their number one contender have a triple crown.
No.
This ex-player joins Y team, you know. Oh,
this is different.
Now they're going to win the EuroLeague. EuroLeague is a crazy league. So let's keep these 2024-25 season predictions, at least for the summer. But I see your point. I agree. But every time when I see that something looks really great, I try to look for some challenges or obstacles that I don't see right now. And one of those challenges is a simple fact that Keenan Evans is playing for a playoff contender or for a team that making the playoffs is already a huge achievement. And we had such case in Darius Thompson. He looked like a perfect fit for FS. Look what happened. So I'm
but
kind of
but
okay.
But Keenan plays 25 minutes
Keenan,
a game.
It's not a disrespect. It's of like being aware that going to the next level and trying to win the title, not the playoff berth, is a huge challenge. Pressure on Olympiacos is huge. So, you know, let's be patient. Let's be patient with Keenan Evans, you know, first of all, suiting up for Olympiacos. Then, you know, making his first games, you know, adjusting to this different environment. Different game style of Yorgos Barsokas. And then we can talk. I mean, I believe that he has full potential to be super successful because of the personality qualities, because of his game qualities. But what I've learned throughout years in the EuroLeague that you have to be patient.
See, this is the dad talking.
Exactly.
No, you know why he's the dad? He said not X and Y, but he said X and Y. He said Y on our bonus podcast. Hey, guys, another thing. Did you know that Keenan Evans, if he finishes the season with a couple of more free throws, he'll be in the 50-40-90 club? Actually, I just looked at it.
Stats, sorry.
Hey, come on. That's an achievement.
That's a never overrated thing in my eyes. In my eyes, that's never overrated thing. In the conversation of Warrior on the podcast and also one guy that probably Augustus is going to bring on the table during this podcast, right?
What do you mean?
You were shouting in the in our office that Messina is overrated.
Oh.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Wow.
Is that the transition?
What do you mean? I mean, let's not pretend. God. No, let's not pretend.
Oh, hot takes, man. Come on now.
You cannot insult the professor like that.
I'm not Both insulting anybody.
Both of you.
He's the guy. He's not respecting dads.
I'm respecting dads. Wait, when did I say that I don't respect
dads? Okay. Go on with your hot takes from Milan Žalgiris.
Hot takes Milan Žalgiris? We are just going.
Well, I think we just wrapped up with Keenan Evans.
Yeah. Unless, do you see any of you? Do you see a better fit than Olympiakos for Keenan? Besides Žalgiris,
I would love to see him in Fenerbahce. Other than that,
but that's in case of someone departing, of course. Not just.
I mean,
obviously, right? So. What? Oh, what?
Do you know?
I know. Some guy, but that's. Do you think he would be a good fit with Kalatis there? Probably, right?
Probably, yeah.
Just like one guy we're not mentioning right now, take his spot. Is that what you're saying?
No, you just mentioned the guy. He would probably take his spot from.
Oh really? I was thinking about Dorsey. I was thinking he would replace.
So many speculations on this podcast, you know.
I don't know. Hey, you said Fenerbahce. I'm asking questions.
You're just cutting Fenerbahce players for no reason. They're gonna win the title.
Guess this player leaving Fenerbahce.
They might win the title in 2 months, and they're just like cutting their main guys from the team. Come on now. Be a little bit more respectful.
24-25 season. Can't wait.
Be just a little bit more respectful. You know, be patient, man.
Okay, so Fenerbahce. Anything else? Anywhere else, rather?
Milano's a great spot, though.
Okay, let's go there.
Oh, wait. He just beat them yesterday.
Let's go to the bonus and Milano.
That was painful. So, Augustus.
I will say this simply, and I will be honest. It's another proof. Yesterday's game was another proof why Trinchieri is better than Messina at the moment.
Okay.
And, you know... Okay, what do you think the coach's main responsibility is? That's a question for you guys. Yeah.
To prepare the game plan.
Put them in the best situation to win the game.
No, as
don't worry, that was the answer I was looking for.
Okay. Don't waste our time, bro.
No,
you can add something.
To put the canvas where the players will paint. You know, that's what Trinchieri says. Wow.
That's a Trinchieri. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Oh, shit.
Okay, so one coach did do that yesterday. The other just went, let's just win by individual talent. And like, if the coach's most important job among many others is to prepare your team and to put the team in the best position to succeed, I saw one team that was constantly attacking Shabazz Napier and Nikola Mirotic on offense, and it didn't matter who had the ball, whether it was Keenan Evans, whether it was Dovydas Giedraitis or Edmund Sumner. They were attacking those two guys in almost every possession. Like, they knew the weak spots. The other team was just playing offense like this. We have Siobhan Shields. We have Nikola Mirotic. We will score in some way, you know. And that's not... Even if you have more talent or a bigger budget, that's not how you win games when you're playing away, you know. Sometimes you succeed because they're just that good. But that's why Milano have been so inconsistent, I think, this season. They win an amazing double week last week, and then they go to Kaunas where they are favorites, I think, after a week like that one, and they lose because in the offense there's few ideas. There are few ideas. They're just playing pick and roll. Žalgiris had an answer for that. They had a great defense and they took care of it. It's like the team that attacks the weaker spots of the others will have a better chance to win in the end, and that's as simple. Yeah, I know it took a fantastic game from Sumner, but he was attacking Shabazz Napier almost all the time, and he was barely playing defense. So I think it's crazy to think that Milano is a bottom five offensive team this season and last season. And I think this is a
They're bottom
huge
five?
Use. Yeah.
With Nikola Mirotic, with Shabazz Napier, with Shaman Shields, with Nikola Melli, with all these assets and Wojtman Mado. Yeah. Oh my God.
And you know,
Mamma mia.
And you know, they will say injuries happened. Yeah, they happened, but you still have a better roster on most nights than Žalgiris do. So that's not an excuse, you know, that you didn't have your full team in every week. Like Žalgiris had the same thing, a lot of problems, you know, during the season. In November, three guys were missing. No new guys came in. And, you know, when in Milano someone is injured, you always have somebody coming in from the NBA. So I think that's not an excuse. Yeah,
your backup probably is always the starting player in Žalgiris.
Exactly. Like Devon Hall, for example. You know, you can have many other Devon cases. Hall, so,
I mean, Voigtman, Mao Dalot, they would all start for Žalgiris.
Like maybe not in Keenan Evans' place, but in
the, oh yeah, in the, except in from
the, in the, in the
yeah.
shooting guard spot for sure. So I think that's why Trinchieri is you know a better coach at the moment for me.
You guys are older than me. You've been watching the EuroLeague maybe when I was a child still. Was Ettore Messina different before he went to the NBA and he changed a lot and he stopped, you know, maybe being such a tactician and started giving more freedom and having more simple actions, like Augusta says? Or
I mean, he was always defensive-minded head coach. All the championships, all the success that he had was basically built on strong defensive core, I would say. But of course, offensively, he always had talents like Manu, like, I don't know, Trajan Langdon, John Robert Holden, and CSKA, a lot of talented players. And after the NBA years, he actually became, let's say, more flexible or open to some utilizing individual talent offensively, I would say. Putting players themselves to decide games or to decide offensive situations.
That's what I was thinking.
I would say like this.
Yeah,
I have to say, like, the way he constructs the defense is really amazing. But I was more talking, you know, about the other side where I think he's lacking.
Maybe so. They need this NFL thing, offensive coaches.
Coach.
Or like what Scariolo did in the Spanish national team, basically the same. I mean, maybe it sounds like a joke, but...
No, maybe it makes sense at the same time. Like in martial arts, you have for different martial arts, and mixed martial arts, you have a different coach for different, like for jiu-jitsu, for striking. So maybe, like you say, or NFL, you have offensive coach and defensive coach, and both do the good job in separate areas, but it's hard to find one that does both. Well, it's not, but...
And the stats, I just looked it up completely, fully on bballytics.com. 21-22 season, Milano is 15th in the offensive rating, third on defense. Then you have 22-23, so last year, they are 16th out of 18 teams offensively. So, and this year, they are 14th.
And what were they in the 2021 season when they had Punter and went to the Final Four, I think, right? That's the season.
Yeah, Malcolm Delaney was on the team. Chacho Rodriguez.
That was probably a better season in terms of offense.
The database I'm looking at right now
doesn't have that
okay. for that season. But I think you can look it up somewhere else. Yeah, yeah.
But
they're always top three defensive team.
Yeah.
Usually number one and number two, and bottom three in the offense.
And you can see it.
You say 2021?
Yeah, 2021.
It was top four offense.
Yeah.
In the league.
Yeah.
Wait. Yeah, it was just in on
a, so that's like, a, that's the Final Four yeah. season. That's
yeah.
Oh,
Final
yeah,
Four
okay.
season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it's I don't know how to explain it, to be honest. And you know,
you talked about the roster was constructed in the wrong way. We talked about this. So if you don't have creators for the team,
yeah.
you have only a few guys who can create. It's probably the beginning of the problem that manifests in a bigger sense.
Exactly. Like he had Chacho and he had Punter and he had
Delaney.
Yeah. And they were amazing because they were really good creating. Right now, I think Shabazz Napier did not, you know, fulfill the expectations.
And he joined the team in
the middle of the season.
Yeah.
But they had Pangos that they wanted to replace and they didn't do it while they had all the money. And so that was really weird. They started the season with few guards while they always have injuries in their guard situation. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but it's been three seasons as they are in the bottom three offensively. And I think that's why they're not as good as everyone expects them to be at the start, looking at their roster. And the names are...
And no disrespect to, obviously, Coach Ettore Messina, but since he is also the manager of the team and gets the roster together, then you cannot blame, like, you know, sometimes the coach could say, oh, but I didn't get the right players for myself or something like that. But now the responsibility is all on his shoulders in both collecting the personnel and then utilizing them.
And by the way, regarding Etter's future, I was checking his situation. I mean, we all remember that he extended the contract when Milan was, let's say, at the bottom mentally, when they were in a losing situation. He extended the contract until 2026, I think, both as the president of the basketball operations and the head coach. But I've been hearing like some names being thrown in, like as a potential replacements for Messina for the next season. But then when I started checking the, let's say, market and rumors, what people, basketball people are talking behind the scenes recently, I was told that, you know, there are no intentions, or at least there were no intentions up until this moment to replace Messina. Or let's say people from the basketball market believe that he will continue. But of course, we don't know if they won't make the playoffs. Let's say they lose the Italian league. Who knows what might change? Because there are some big names on the market from the head coaching department. But at least recently, there were no indications that they might consider seriously the head coach move.
I mean, there were talks before, I remember, and then they were denied because there's a good relationship between the owner and Messina.
I mean, there were talks also because Messina, like, how many times? Like twice he tried to step down as the head coach. Mm. He went to the owners and they said, hey, continue your job. Mm. So
maybe that's another thing to consider. If the coach already wanted to step down twice, you know, in what kind of a situation are you really? If you tried to step down, you were pursued not to. How much are you trusting your own methods anymore, you know? Just psychologically. I don't know.
Anyway,
let's talk about Žalgiris.
Yeah, do we want to talk about Sumner?
Like, yeah,
that guy could have shot. I don't know. He could have kicked the ball if he was allowed to. That ball was going in to the basket, and when he almost dropped Alex Poitras on that important three pointer, I was like, whoa.
And Poitras is a great perimeter defender. So
he ain't bad.
You know what? I need to say this first about the Edmund Sumner. He just said, in your face, Gytis, when I put him as the worst signing of the in-season signings.
That's the impact that this podcast has.
No, it doesn't, but yeah. I mean, it's only one game. Let's not forget. Let's not get overhyped, but
he's playing way better.
He is. Exactly. So it's not about one just this one game, but I think the decision making was very different from what we're used to. He's passing the ball. He gets into the paint, he passes the ball out. He also defensively is not losing his man. Maybe the offense wasn't too creative there, so it wasn't too difficult, but in general, I was surprised that he actually is adjusting, because we were saying this whole time that he's just struggling to adjust, and now it seems like, okay, there's actually some hope that this guy, with all this physical
tools,
let's say, talent, that he can actually be a valuable player in the EuroLeague, because for a bit, it seemed like he will never adjust, and now I think...
Edmund Sumner brings some nasty, and Žalgiris needed some nasty after the first half, because I think Žalgiris scored 35 points, and I've checked, it was the worst record playing home under Andrea Trinchieri. They were scoring 46 points in Žalgiris Arena on average since Trinchieri took over. And, you know, offense was sluggish, you know, it was tough. And this nastiness, all these shots, okay, there were some mismatch situations with Shabazz, but there was Poitras on him. Edmund was creating those shots by himself out of nowhere, and that's what he brings on the table. You know, some crazy situations. He does some great reads, kicks the ball out to the corner, open three-pointer, kicks the ball for the makes lob for Cavario Hayes. It was for an alley-oop dunk. He brings some nasty to the game that, you know, can be controlled a little bit with some time, because I remember when we made this top three worst in season signings, I mentioned that there are basketball executives who believe in Edmund Sumner long term, and maybe that was one of those signs that there is some material to believe. You know, he needs to calm his game down, he needs to adjust to European basketball, he needs to let's say, be more consistent with his decisions and just not to force the game like he was doing at the beginning. And we're talking just about the offense. In defense, he was amazing. Mm-hmm. He was diving for the ball like crazy. He had some great deflection, steal because of his length, because mm-hmm. of his size. So it was for sure the best game of the season by Edmund Sumner.
Absolutely. And what a moment to actually do it, like to have your best game of the season in Žalgiris. Probably the most important game they had. And of course, now the next one is more important, but they couldn't afford to lose. And to me, the biggest change, like, it took quite a while for Sumner to get this, like, to adjust. And he's not doing that in every game. But he's way better with decisions in the paint. Like, if mm-hmm. you can see, the difference in his game is that when he's inside the paint and he doesn't have the advantage, he's not jumping every time. He's like stopping on 2 feet, mm-hmm. maybe kicking it out if he doesn't have the advantage, instead of just jumping in the air and trying to make a super tough, ridiculous shot that sometimes gets in. But now, like yesterday, I saw really good kickout passes that didn't convert into assists because other guys made some passes. But he really created the advantage with his speed, stopping in the paint, kicking it out, and then the other guy is catching and driving. So I think that was huge. It took him quite some time, but finally he's there.
Who does this situation remind you of? Edmund Sumner starting getting better with a certain coach. Nobody comes to mind.
Žalgiris, Wade Baldwin, Sisikavičius.
Wade Baldwin, Bayern, and Trinchieri making you know, Wade adjust to the game much better than he had before. With Olympiacos.
But I wouldn't put it on the coach, to be honest.
I think in this situation, I would say the coach with his experience and probably mentorship to Edmund Sumner. I'm obviously not in the locker room, but I would think that after the coaching change, there was a lot of things that Edmund, you know, started getting a bit better with Trinchieri.
I think it was really just more about the time and experience of feeling the EuroLeague basketball, or on top of that, when, you know, coaching change.
But it
had impact, probably. But I think that, you know, these other things were more important.
I don't know. When it comes to communication with the previous coach, no disrespect, because he's Maksvytis, he speaks English, it's all good. But to communicate some things, I think Trinchieri was able much better.
He had Sabonis, yeah, who speaks fluent English.
No, I understand, but in the game, there's different situations. But in general, I think, I don't know. I think it's Trinchieri's, definitely Trinchieri's had some impact on that. And also another thing that we haven't mentioned, did you not miss Roland Schmitz in this game? Because I feel like we all kind of forgot we needed him in the game.
Butkevičius,
I know, right?
Had an amazing game.
Butkevičius, Ulanovas both were okay to guard Mirotić in many situations. Mirotić was actually making shots, but tough shots, you know. And then in general, you'd think the seven or however many forwards that Olympia has, you'd think it would be a problem for Žalgiris, but no problem whatsoever. Didn't need to rely on Brady Manek so much. Just the two smaller forwards took over.
And Arnas hitting the dagger.
That three, yeah. He was basically hitting all the shots, to be honest.
Second game in a row.
You know what was weird? Speaking of Mirotić, I mean, he was on a hot start. He scored 8 first quarter points and he was basically unstoppable. But to me, what was weird, I'm just checking now if he had any foul trouble or what, because he scored 8 points in 9 minutes in the first quarter and Milan was up by 3. Mm-hmm. In the second quarter, he played 56 seconds. What the hell is that? And to me, I had the same feeling about Shabazz Napier. At some point, he started creating those shots and converting it to those points, you know, and he was really good. But then he also kind of cooled down at some point. So maybe they couldn't keep their rhythm with some substitutions and rotations that they had. But Butkevičius, man, there has to be some advanced stat that would show that if Arnas Butkevičius is making an off-balance three-pointer with the shot clock expiring in the first quarter, in 10 games, he will hit a corner clutch three-pointer in the four, and Žalgiris will win this game. And actually, I tried to check stats, and what's crazy, in 2 seasons, Arnas Butkevičius, what actually surprised me, he had only 7 games with more than 10 points. Mm-hmm. Žalgiris won 6 of them. And when Butkevičius scores 2 three-pointers or more, Žalgiris won all 4 games in 2 seasons. And that's okay, it. That might be a coincidence.
We have the strategy, man.
That might be a coincidence, but it also speaks about the fact that Žalgiris is quite limited offensively. And they have a lot of, let's say, role players or defensive-minded players like, you know, Butkevičius and Giedraitis. And if those guys are making shots, you know, helping those other scorers to create, they improve Žalgiris' chances of winning games significantly. And because we're talking about a mid-level team that is limited offensively, and they need all the pieces, all their effort, you know, to combine for a playoff run like last year or this playing race situation like we have this year.
And if those one of those shots, like you said, he makes 2 shots, but one of those are acrobatic, contested, off the backboard 3-pointers, then you know, as an opponent,
it's a W.
What can we do today?
I think we can go on to other games, but I just wanted to say this thing: there were 2 shots yesterday in Žalgiris Arena that hit the rim, hit the top of the rim, hit the shot clock, and went in after. Twice in the same game.
Yeah, Mantas, please put this on right now, because that was ridiculous. And both didn't count, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, both didn't count, obviously. But I was like, that happened in the first quarter, and that happened in the second half as well. And I'm like, twice in the same game? How often? Not how often, but I think that has not happened before, or maybe once.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But crazy anyways, as the play-in race is.
Exactly.
What do you think about the situation that we have? I mean, a lot of discussion points. Let's say huge victory for Efes against Baskonia, you know, improving their chances. First of all, now they made themselves in the top 10, having 1 victory advantage over 4 teams that have 14 victories, which is crazy. So what do you think about this whole race in general?
I don't know. It's just surprising how every time you think you know something, you don't. I mean, Anadolu Efes, I had not making the play-in. 3 rounds ago, I wasn't even thinking about them making the play-in. Now they look like they are legit chances to do so. And then Partizan, we just talked about for a while, you know. Valencia was in the first half of the standings for the majority of the season. Look at them now, you know, they're just some teams are just got into form at the right time, and the others got into a slump at the wrong time. That's what's happening right now.
I completely wrote off Efes after they lost in
Lyon.
Yeah. But then they won against Olympiacos at home, and you know, their last 2 games were Alba and Baskonia. And Baskonia is in a terrible shape at the moment. You know,
I wouldn't be surprised if they're out of top 10, to be honest. It wouldn't shock me anymore.
They have 2 away games. One is against Real Madrid. They don't care about they already have the first place, but it's still Real Madrid in the Visning Center, so it's going to be tough. And Baskonia are not playing any defense at the moment. They have the second worst defensive rating in the last 6 games. And so playing Real Madrid in Madrid with that defense is not going to do that. So a lot of teams are trying to catch them. And yeah, I agree with you, Donatas.
Their defense is not there, but then their offense is very dependent on making shots. If you don't make the shots that Marcus Howard puts up, and he puts up a lot of them, and I feel like their offense is a bit predictable because of that, because when they have Marcus Howard on the court, then all the offense is running through getting off-screen for him and well, not even open shots. Just shoot up a shot. If you have a slight opening, shoot up a shot. If you don't make these shots, then they're screwed. And that's what happened yesterday as well in the third quarter. I watched a little bit of that game. Efes just completely took over in the third quarter. Like you said, defense wasn't there, but maybe some unexpected X-factor guys started playing well. Will Clyburn also a great game, even though not a perfect game. He missed some open shots, but Sometimes he just reminds us that he's Will Clyburn.
He's him. Yeah, sometimes, you know, he's just him.
Because sometimes you don't see him, like for the majority of the season, you might think he's having a bad season, but then he has this performance like
when
that.
You allow Will Clyburn to score 10 points in the first 5 minutes of the game, you know that you're in trouble. And then Shane Larkin stepped up in the second half, 28 points in total. Guys like Osmani, you know, joining in, you know, from the defensive standpoint, it was a collapse from the beginning. I mean, they killed them through, they put Chioza and Howard in the starting lineup. And a lot of cases, you know, there were obvious mismatches. Clyburn suddenly getting against Chioza or whatever. They're moving the ball out and they're just making some open shots from good situations. And I mean, with this FS team that they're right now with under Coach Mijatovic, they have the best offensive rating in the EuroLeague in the last 8 games. FS won 6 of 8. They have the best 3-point shooting percentage, the best true shooting percentage. They have guys like Larkin, you know, scoring 17 points per game. Clyburn stepped up his game with 15 points per game. And this is where I actually wanted to hear Augusto's opinion, because the biggest change is the role and usage of Darius Thompson. Under Coach Jen, Darius Thompson was averaging 13 points per game.
He was playing second option, probably.
He was playing 29 minutes per game as well. Mm-hmm. And he was having good stats, you know, 13 points, 52% two-point shooting, 3.2 assists per game. When Mijatovic took over, his minutes reduced to 21. His scoring average is less than 8 points, 2.4 assists per game.
And he doesn't start the games anymore, I don't think.
And that's basically the only change. Clyburn's role shifted up and Darius Thompson had to step down. Was that the key to success? I mean, this whole thing with Darius Thompson and Shane Larkin didn't work as well as a lineup with Clyburn and Larkin orchestrating the offense is the winning formula.
I think not only that. I think, you know, obviously, like, you, at least I didn't see the FS players believing anymore in the coach. So they had to do the coaching change. And what they did in offense, you mentioned they have the best offensive rating. He simplified it. He put his best players, basically Shane Larkin is like his usage. I don't know how high it is at the moment, but it should be pretty high. And he just puts the ball in his best player's hands. And instead of Erdem Can longer sets, that was his kind of trademark thing. FS offensively play more simple with, you know, slip screens and a lot of that stuff, early pick and rolls. And that seems to be working. So, you know, I think that was the biggest change. Of course, you know, Darius Thompson is playing less. You can see that statistically. But to me, it was just, you know, this philosophical change. Let's say they're playing more freely without long sets and stuff like that.
Larkin's usage numbers, according to Bibolitics.com, man, Mikolas will be proud of us after this podcast.
Wow,
24% for Shane Larkin. Will Clyburn, let me check, 25. Darius Thompson, 20. So that's
the
very
whole season, right?
Good number.
Can you check
from the last 8 games.
Okay.
Oh, the last 8 games.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but, you know, Thompson uses just 20%, but he's playing way less, so.
Yeah.
Than he was used to.
A lot of different formulas for the remaining of this regular season. We're just 2 games away. Okay, most of the teams are 2 games away, and a lot of crazy things still can happen. It's basically impossible to put you like 2 or 3 most likely scenarios because a lot of important games left. And in some situations, when we rely on some teams, they tend to disappoint, and those that we're underrating, they tend to get into the top 10. But do you have any like shocking takes for how the play-in race is going to end in 2 weeks?
I do. No, actually,
I think you already said it.
What is it?
The hottest take, that Baskonia is not going to make it.
I don't think it's a very hot take. Have you seen their body language and the way I don't know. They don't feel like they're going to get back to that.
There's one guy that will disagree with you for sure. Shout out. We all know who.
But they're just inconsistent. We cannot trust them, you know. There are some teams that we cannot trust. So, I mean, I'm not saying that they will be out. I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be surprised if they're out because It's Baskonia. They're really unpredictable, and these other teams are stepping up, and it's just getting crazy, man.
And I think they are the crucial team here in this playing race, because if they drop both, then it's a whole different picture. But if they, you know, get to 17 wins, then it's all the other teams that are right now 10th mm-hmm. and lower, only fighting for one spot.
Yeah. Crucial game for Efes is Fenerbahce in the next round.
Huge.
If they make it, probably they're making to the play-in.
Guess what? It's crucial for Fenerbahce because they need to win as well.
Yeah.
Well, if they win today, it's a different story, but still, they will probably want to win that game as well.
Yo, Fener need to win all the games because, like I said before the podcast, before we were recording, like,
yeah, you're gonna play.
Second place is huge in this race because not only you have home court advantage, but you are going to play a team from the play-in and not the sixth seed. And sixth seed is going to be an amazing team: Fener, Olympiacos, Panathinaikos, Barcelona, or the same Monaco. And in the play-in, you have Maccabi, Virtus, and then two teams from that, you know, play-in race right now. That's a gap, I think. And, you know, having in mind that Maccabi, if Maccabi is seventh, where are they playing? Are they playing in an empty gym? That's also huge. That second spot is so valuable.
Hey, and by the way, since you mentioned Maccabi, to me, what they achieved this season is so underrated. We mentioned a lot of overrated things on this podcast already, but to me, their success is so underrated. They're playing away always. And we kind of remember them as a home team from the last year. They probably had the best home winning record last season. They were basically unbeatable in Menora Meftachim. And now they're playing all their games away, and they have this crazy winning record of 59% of games that they won. And they still have a difficult chance to make it to the playoffs initially, you know, avoiding the play-in, but still they were always confident that they will be in this top eight conversation, but now they're fighting for the home court advantage for the play-in. It doesn't make sense anymore, but still, you know, playing in Belgrade against Virtus, if it's Virtus, it's a huge advantage over playing in Bologna, that important game. And who knows, later you might drop in then to play. What if Partizan is playing in the play-in and they have to play Maccabi in Belgrade? That's, in Nikolic.
That's what happens.
It's Partizan's home game, basically.
But no fans, I guess, still. Or
they do have some fans.
They would have fans?
I don't know.
That's I remember then Israeli fans.
It would be
fans.
Really, if they allowed Serbian fans to get into the game for
why not?
For a Maccabi home game.
Why not?
Because then it's really unfair. That's two away games. Like, it's all away games. Real away games. Now, if you get like no fans, like they've been playing the whole season, then it's more fair. So you have no fans.
Yeah, but let's say if Žalgiris was playing Maccabi away and you have 200 traveling fans to Belgrade from Kaunas, it's fair. But if the game, you know, it had to, okay, they can play in Panevėžys, not in Belgrade. If you face Partizan,
then it's fine. But if they play in Belgrade, all the Serbians are gonna fill the gym, and it's gonna be a total disadvantage. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's not Partizan's fault.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. I mean,
so
yeah, it's just the situation. Okay. But this season, I mean, I looked at the last season's standings as well. You had to get 19 wins to make it to the top eight last season. Now we have the eighth team has 17 wins and could go up to 19, in my opinion. But we now have the play-in tournament, which changes the whole thing. And in general, I feel like it's. Last year was very competitive. We forget, like, if we go seasons back before that, there used to be clear leaders and clear underdogs, at least a little bit more clear. Now everyone's in the mix, and except for the bottom two teams and maybe the top team. Everyone else is changing, swapping positions. It's a crazy, crazy season.
But there's one thing that we actually discussed with one of my, let's say, basketball pals that came to our mind. Would you agree that the competitiveness is probably the all-time high, but the quality of the game is not necessarily matching up the competitiveness?
I would agree. There were a lot of games this year that were competitive, but not beautiful to watch. Not necessarily, absolutely. And yeah, but I had that thought cross my mind during some games of this season. Not necessarily now.
Was this not in January when they cramped up like 3 double weeks in the whole in 1 month, and then you know that could be one.
Who
of
knows?
The
maybe
reasons.
That's impacted the impacting
I
the
would
quality.
Say it had because when you have more games, you get more close and close to the NBA where you have no time to prepare and you have game after game basically. So yeah, I would think about that before making the assumptions about the quality. And just looking at the specific games that you're talking about.
But you know, they added just one additional double week. That's not much different from last year or
it was it was before. Definitely more than just one double week. It was just I think wasn't it like in the 5 weeks, 3 double weeks or something like that?
No, I remember. I mean, in total, the number of double weeks is not that much higher. It's like,
but it's still high, you know. So
it was still high,
but it was cramped in that 1 month because they had.
Oh, they
had
consecutive double weeks as well.
Yeah, consecutive double weeks. But I remember this thought crossing my mind. I don't know, even November, and January, a little bit. Just
I mean, I don't say that the schedule is the biggest impact for the quality, you know, measuring the quality, but just in general, the feeling that sometimes those games lack quality, not just you know made shots, but just quality in general. As we spoke about this fourth quarter, let's say in Belgrade. For the end, we have some stuff from our social media crew. But by the way, one spoiler alert, the next episode that we are going to have is going to be a Q&A session. The entire episode will be available only for BN Plus members. So be sure to subscribe us on basketnews.com/plus. There are 3 different subscription levels. Some great offers for Basket News BN Plus rookies, let's say. Ritis is joining us for the next episode, so you can drop all your questions already here in the comment section, and the author of the best question will win BN Plus subscription and maybe something else.
Maybe Donata's OnlyFans subscription for a month.
Wow, that was so unnecessary. I'm in my all-time worst mental and physical shape, so I'm not opening the OnlyFans subscription right now, for now.
You need water now?
No water,
that
man.
That water coming in.
You see,
right now,
1 hour without water, and I'm not even missing it.
It ain't 1 hour.
You mentioned this stuff only now, and
classic,
I don't care.
Classic Spider-Man meme. Always works.
Shout out to our Basket News
social
media
team
and their meme department. Mm. I know they're all into it.
And the trend that they're setting for the European media outlets.
Oh yeah, they're definitely setting the trend and, you know,
to follow.
Inspiring people, other people to...
Yeah.
You meant inspiring to copy, right?
Yeah. Not sure who, but... Okay, who's your pick for the EuroLeague 2K cover?
For this season?
This season?
Kostas Lukas to me.
Oh, okay.
Because
for the drama.
I mean, I would put Mike James because he's the best player, but American players, they're not drawing such a big attention.
Luke Sigma on the cover. One of the
Luke
iconic,
is getting so much disrespect
know,
for no reason.
I know, and that's actually unfair. Also, another thing.
This is Mike James.
It's a silhouette of Mike. But someone said in the comments, I think, EuroLeague is not about individuals. There should be a bunch of players.
There should be coaches, man.
Okay.
Coaches league.
Just coaches, yeah.
Mantas, let's just go through the comments real quick. I want to see the... I mean, let's be completely real and unbiased. It would be 10,000% Mike James. Mike for sure. Why there is no official EuroLeague, blah, blah, blah. Punter, Wade Baldwin, punter, Mike, none. Oleg Balcharovsky.
Seems like a lot of...
By the way, interesting. Mike James and Obradovic. So this is the best mix between the Players League and the Coaches League.
What, you cut the person in half? And
yeah, no, put like split
side.
Screen. Yeah.
Okay. Split screen.
Me.
Dimitris Agravanis.
Balcharovsky has 2 votes already.
3.
Oh, Monaco social media account steps in.
Okay. Okay. I think...
Okay, that's enough.
I think that's enough.
Panayotis Galizakis.
Oh, and this also. We're doing a giveaway on our Instagram. If you are not following us yet on Instagram,
wow.
you're committing
issues,
a crime.
Yeah.
Because you must. We have these 2 great jerseys of Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray.
For basketball pals.
For 2 friends. You have a friend. You want to be a dynamic duo. On your, I don't know, going outside playing 3-on-3 basketball. you rock up with these and everyone's going to make fun of you if you actually come with Jamal Murray and Jokic jerseys.
If there was like Nikola Jokic and a Vlatko Čančar jersey, that would be
No, but in
funny.
General, you can get these two jerseys. Just need to tag your friend who you would like to win this with, and we'll choose a random guy or gal to win it.
One guy will be with the Jokic jersey, the other guy will be with Murray jersey, and the third guy is going to be with the simple
so sexist Augustus jersey. Not necessarily guy, yeah, could be anyone.
Only guys playing basketball.
Come on.
Okay,
that's all for this week. Two podcasts in 1 week.
Yeah, see you on the next Q&A episode.